Welcome to this podcast from VCP 2014, the Vital Church Planting Conference. The conference is held in Toronto, Ontario, Canada, every year and brings together church planting leaders from across Canada. It is co-sponsored by the Anglican Diocese of Toronto and the Wycliffe College Institute of Evangelism, which is closely connected with Fresh Expressions Canada. We hope you enjoy this podcast. For more information on the conference and how you can register for the next Vital Church Planting Conference, please visit www.vitalchurchplanting.com.
Good afternoon, everyone. So I got the after lunch, so you'll be snoozing. I won't be offended if you just don't lean on the person next to you. Well, I'm very delighted to be here. I'm particularly delighted to be in this auspicious room. I was expecting to be in the dungeon somewhere. So very good to see you here. Obviously, you're interested in campuses and hopefully interested in the strategic role of campuses in reaching the city, which is going to be the topic of today's discussion. Let me just scroll this up. Okay, so I'm just going to begin with just a little kind of intro and an overview, and then I'm going to introduce, we have a couple of panelists. The Snow claimed two others, so at least that's the official line I'm going to give them so that I don't embarrass them for bailing out at the last minute. And they will share a little bit of their experience on campus, and then we'll open it up to a conversation. So I said to the panelists that this was going to be very informal, and that was before they came into the second most formal room in the building. But that is the intention, so it's really to have a conversation. So I'm going to begin by getting you all to come up front, get a little bit closer. I know that's really irritating when people do that, but since you probably do it to other people, I'm going to do it to you. So just kind of move up a little bit so we can get a bit kind of close in, and we can have a more of an intimate conversation. That's fantastic. And you guys get a bye. But that means also we're going to be asking you direct questions, so be prepared, okay? Okay, so let me begin. I'm just going to go through this. Questions. So the first question is, why care about campuses? I mean, you're here, you care. But we talk about a lot of things, and sometimes we don't ask ourselves kind of why bother, and I think it's worth doing that. Let me answer that question kind of somewhat anecdotally, or just using one example, which is the University of Toronto. It illustrates some general things about Toronto, general things about university, but it's kind of close. No, actually, let me just ask first of all, how many of you are based in Toronto? Show of hands. Okay, that's pretty much everyone. Ontario? That's the rest of you. Okay. Quebec, I'm sorry. Canada, not the other ones. Canada, that would be, and Quebec. Okay, anyone else from far-flung? Okay, I'm from England, in case you didn't know. How many of you are already directly involved in campus ministry? Yeah, okay, that was a loosely worded question. All right, yeah, you're on the ball. Okay, I thought lunch, you'd all be docile, you wouldn't give me trouble. Okay. You go on the campus once a week to talk to someone. That's engaged, okay. That's good, all right. So the rest of you would like to do that? You just don't know where it is? No? Okay. But you're interested in how to engage with the campus, all right. So let's just take the University of Toronto, which is a picture of it. That is University College. Oh gosh, I'm embarrassed myself. University College. What's the official title? University. Yeah, I know it's University of Toronto, but it's only one. So University of Toronto has like 11 colleges, and this is... Thank you. That's why I was right. Okay. You just were all looking blank at me like I must have got something wrong. I thought, oh, okay. Okay, so university has a whole bunch of colleges, which makes you think when you walk on a campus that it's a kind of a small kind of place, right? And in some ways it's like that. It's like a whole kind of lots of villages. But when you add it all up together, you're talking about 75,000 students. And then add to that staff, including faculty and everyone else, that's another 250. So that's a reasonably sized town, and it's in the middle of the city. It contributes, the university, $5 billion to the economy of Toronto. It is the 15th largest employer in the city. So it's a very significant presence. So that's a kind of good reason to say, oh, you know, the campus, it's, well, it's there, and there's a lot of people there, and a lot of things are happening. It would be worth engaging. But this is the reason that I think it's most important, and that is that the graduates. So on a typical year, the university intakes 15,000 people. 15,000. So when we have Frosh Week, there's 15,000 students to do. So I'll talk a little bit about an engagement that we did with a bunch of churches and a bunch of campus ministries for that. But what's interesting is that actually it graduates, the university graduates 16,000. You wonder, okay, so where do they come from? Well, that's because a lot of them are master's degrees, so they're shorter, so that's how the numbers kind of come out of that. But 16,000 students are graduating every year. So where are they going? Historically at U of T, 70% stay in Toronto. Now the figure, and you just have to look down at the waterfront to see all those condos going up, is probably close to 85%. So if you want to know where's the city going, who are going to be its leaders, well, they're right in that picture, look, playing ball. Because they are going to be the doctors, they're going to be the architects, they're going to be the politicians, they're going to be et cetera, of the city. So the leadership of the city is here in training, which is, I would suggest, is sufficient unto itself to be a reason for every single church in the city, however close or not it is to a campus, however many actual students are involved at the moment, that they should be involved. Because, you know, it's all very well going and doing evangelism in your environment. That's fantastic, right? But by the time they move into, if you're in a suburban church, your parish or your area, they're already behind their fence, lawn. When they graduate, they go into the condos, so they're behind the condo security. They go into the office blocks, they're behind their security. You know, they're hard to get to. But right now, well, not right now, because it's just white at the moment, but in the spring, they're kicking balls around and they are thinking about life. They're thinking about how they're going to make money. They're thinking about who they're going to marry. They're thinking about, occasionally, what their parents believed, what their professors believe, what their friends believe. And you have a moment, you have this window to connect with them, to listen to them, to hear their questions, and to engage your answers. So if you want to reach the city, I suggest that's where you start. This isn't like a kind of radical innovation. I mean, it's a kind of partially a factor of the peculiar demographics of Toronto, that this many students should stay in the city. So if you're going to university in Kingston, for example, that won't be the case. In fact, basically the statistics will be reversed. So I went down to Austin, Texas, and they have a fantastic ministry collaborating between churches and different campus groups, but typically 75% of their graduates are never to be seen again. But here people stay. And there are a few cities in the world where that's true, which are effectively destination cities as far as immigration and education are concerned. Now, you know that there's 100,000 new people coming to the city every year. Well, so we have 15,000 new students. Okay, so let's say half of them are already in the city. So, you know, let's say 5. So 10, potentially, significant of which are coming from around the world. And let's just talk about that for a second, because Nathan's going to talk a little bit about international students, and just want to kind of set that up. So the University of Toronto actually has the most diverse student body of any university in North America. It is also, by headcount, the largest university. And that's interesting that they don't make a big thing out of that. And I think partly just because that would be intimidating. And even to mention the scale of University of Toronto is a little intimidating. But when you go to a little college like this, or, well, not little, but you know what I mean, it's a more intimate kind of environment. So they don't kind of broadcast this, but that is the case. So we have at UT 7,500 international students. That is card-carrying, visa-carrying international students. We have the same number again who are residents but weren't born and in fact came here for university. So you go to high school, you make an application, your parents do, and you get in and you don't have to pay international fees. So you're actually looking at international students, really the real figure is around 15,000. And if you were to go down to the campus, you will know that very few of the people who are on the campus look like your traditional Canadian. It looks like, it actually looks like, it could look like Hong Kong or it could look like Seoul, because the biggest volume of international students at the University of Toronto are first Chinese and second South Korean and then kind of everyone else. And that's reflected in the student body and in international students. And that's reflected, interestingly enough, in, well, obviously, in a sense, the campus groups. And Nathan will talk a little bit about that later. But the biggest campus groups at U of T are the Chinese Fellowship and the Korean Fellowship. The Korean Fellowship recently joined with InterVarsity. Anyone here from InterVarsity? No? Okay, so, there we go. Mr. Bowen, a lifer. InterVarsity joined with the Korean Fellowship, and the Korean Fellowship was basically, I think, 5 times the size of the pre-existing general group. And if you go to Powder Change, and we have John here from Powder Change, you will find that actually the most of the students are Asian. Now, just as a general kind of point about the city, I mean, we know that half of the people who live in Toronto were not born in Toronto, were not even born in Canada. We know that 147 language groups are spoken here. But what's interesting is that, and I mean, this is perhaps a little political, but the original policy of immigration that began in the 70s was, I think we could say, largely started to sort of change the complexion and in some ways the kind of political influence of the church in Quebec and in Toronto. And so the idea of having people from all over the world will kind of diversify the mix of people in the country, and it would have that kind of, it would reduce the effect. And this interesting thing is that had there not been for immigration, the church in Toronto would probably be dead on its feet, because the majority of immigration to Canada has been Chinese and South Koreans, and they are disproportionately evangelical Christians. And so if you go look around the city and you want to look at this, the churches that are large and growing and involved in doing many things, then you look at the Chinese community and the Korean community. And this is reflected also on the campus. So anyway, all of this is to say that the university is this kind of microcosm of the city, and it's where people are gathered and where the leaders are going to come from. So engage in them. So I think that's a good reason to engage with the campus. Now, engaging with the campus is not something new. There's a long history of it. I mean, the student volunteer movement, for example. in the 1880s, beginning of the 1880s, that ended up sending missionaries around the world. And in many ways, the people who are now who are coming to Toronto from China, on from Korea, are actually directly have been called to faith through those historic missions. So the opportunity and the capacity for students to spread the gospel and to engage the gospel into their life and into their way of working and their way of having families is potentially very profound. So I think these are all good reasons to say we should give this our attention. I'm going to introduce our guests in a moment. I just want to just to kind of pull back a little bit. So I've talked about the University of Toronto, but we have other universities. So I mean, we have Ryerson. We have also all of the UT campuses, and we have a whole bunch of colleges. The total student body in Toronto is about 350,000 people. Humber College actually has more students than U of T, although the majority of those are part-time. So basically, wherever you are in the city, you will find, you know, within, well, I don't recommend you do it, spitting distance, you will find a college, and you will find students, and you will find this kind of diversity. And you will find opportunities to connect with people who, while grown up and cultivated in a culture that is very hostile towards Christianity, are nevertheless in that process of figuring out who they are. So the bigger picture, the bigger picture. So, okay, let me just backtrack a second. So one mission, so a bit of detail. So one mission is a network of campus groups and churches that began at the University of Toronto and have collaborated to do things on the campus that people couldn't do on their own. And part of that has been kind of supporting each other's initiatives and promoting them. And the others has been actually doing sort of exceptional things that we couldn't do on our own. So last Frosh Week, 15,000 students arriving. So they arrive and they have a parade around the city. Bloor gets closed. They march about 10,000 students. And then they go to a concert, actually, right in front of here. And then they get dolled up and they go to a nightclub downtown that takes 5,000 people, and they fill it with students, and they bust them down. Needless to say, in that kind of event, you know a little probably what Frosh is about. Alcohol consumption is a big issue. A lot of the students are actually underage. So these churches and campus groups gathered together, and we employed a program that was developed in Australia called Red Frogs, and we had volunteers. In fact, I can see some of them here. And we went and we offered to the University Student Union to come and help, to be some sober companions, if you like. And we actually went on the parade and we gave out water, and at the concert we gave out food, and then we helped with the busing of students down to the club downtown, and then bringing them back and then doing walk homes. And I think there's about 15 churches or campus groups involved in that. So that's the background of one mission. Now, one of the things we realized was that there's about 20 different Christian campus groups at U of T. And then at Ryerson, it's a few less, but there's still a lot of them. And often they don't kind of know what each other is doing, and sometimes they don't want to know. But I mean, there's a lot going on, but there isn't a lot of coordination. So the purpose of gathering people together was to do that, so we don't kind of do two things at the same time. And I'll come back to that in a moment. So one of the things about information, so what's going on, you know, who's doing what, and when we see 15,000 students arriving, a lot of them coming from out of town, where are they going to find the campus group? I mean, you can go to the club day for students, but you will find about 5,000 people milling around, about 100 different stalls, and it's just a mayhem. And if you can find an intervarsity or camp, you know, good, well done. But you may not. So We were interested in creating something that would be a single point of reference where people could come and find out about campus groups, churches, etc. So we started something called This Toronto. Has anyone heard of this or connected to this on Facebook? Okay, cool. If you haven't, come on. So basically, this was really a proof of concept. So the big picture is to have a full website that has a kind of deep data on campus groups, not just at U of T, but at Ryerson, et cetera, and churches in those areas that give, in a sense, remove any impediment and barrier to Christian kids getting involved in campus. Anyway, we started this, and it kind of just sort of went on its own, and it ended up, it's now, we have about 200 contributors from that many churches and ministries across the city, and we have kind of everything is kind of going on there. So we're actually looking to roll this into a full website, which will be, it's a kind of a central information hub for Christians in the city. But it started because of the campus. And in a sense, that I think that illustrates the point, because the first people who adopted this were students and people involved in campus ministry, and they told their friends, and they saw it, and that's how it kind of grew. And in a sense, this actually illustrates the point that if we can kind of connect with students and draw them into the gospel and engagement in the church and ministry of the kingdom, then, you know, who knows? Okay, so that's just a bigger picture thing. So let me introduce you to two panelists. First, Nathan, you want to come up? So Nathan Kwok is involved in the Toronto Alliance Church, and I'm going to just let you, because I just got thrown in the deep end, so I don't see why I shouldn't throw you in the deep end.
Hello, can this work? Okay.
Is that good?
I'm a pastor at Toronto Alliance Church, so we're at Queen and Bathurst, and we've been there for 20 years, at least 22 years in that area. And I started to come on board as a missionary apprentice working with international students. So whatever Alexander says about international students, that's all correct. And it's huge. I started with international student ministries actually when I was in university, and I just invited my international friends to Thanksgiving or Christmas because they were alone, and I felt like, why don't you just come over? Like, my parents have good food, and you know, you don't have to be alone. And so that started there. And a couple years when I moved to Toronto for seminary at Tyndale, I got in touch with a former international student ministry worker, and he did the same thing basically, and it was geared towards the international students in that area. And so I've been working with them for a couple years and started to work downtown. And so there is a lot of international students. I don't know the exact numbers, but they're here to learn English, they're here to get advanced degrees at U of T, they're here to find work, they're here to work at Tim Hortons on a work exchange, work visa. A lot of Japanese students are there, or Japanese restaurants, there's just tons of them. And they want to learn English, and that's a huge thing. And so one of the things that I started was an English conversation cafe, and the hardest thing was trying to get them to come, because how do we actually advertise? I posted up posters. No one reads posters downtown. They're just too busy, and it's probably not in the same language. But English Conversation Cafe is something I started up, and it's just an opportunity where they can come and speak with a native English speaker, which is perfect because my church has tons of them, students who would love to talk with them. And I think your church also has a lot of native English speakers here, so that's important for them. A lot of them complain that they don't have the practice. A lot of them are at U of T, and they study courses such as, really courses that you don't have to use English, non-arts, science courses, technical subjects, where all the rest of their friends are Asian, from the Asian culture, and so they never practice the English, and they even get worse, even coming, told me that their English is worse after coming to Canada, and that's not helpful at all, and they'll come back disenchanted by their experience here. I don't want that to happen. And one of them told me that, yeah, the same thing that yesterday, that she has no native Canadian speakers that she can practice with. and she's been here for 3 years. This is the reality. So we offer avenues such as English Conversation Cafe, where they can practice their English with native speakers and have a hospitable, kind environment, celebrate their birthdays, you know, just get to recognize them. And the thing that gave us, that really brought, and I told you about the issue is promotion, right? The thing that really helped us was, you know, the internet. The internet is this Toronto or sites that, aggregate sites that are able to put a lot of events together, and one event, one particular site is called Meetup. And we found Meetup, and has anybody heard of Meetup? Here, okay, Meetup is a site where you can post your events. If you're an organizer, you post your events. Say you have a hiking group, you have a English conversation group, you have your Bitcoin group, whatever, developers group, you whatever hobby you have, and then you could gather people who are on that site to actually find you, because you host a date and you host a geographical location. So depending on where you're living, it will actually hook you up to places where in your vicinity. So that's what we use. We use this Meetup group, and all these internationals, they use the internet heavily because that's how they get information. They can translate the internet websites using Google Translate, and they use Meetup back in their own home country. So they, our first event had we set a limit of 10, so we only had really 3 people show up. But when we raised that limit to at least 100, we had 20 or 30 people just show up to our church, and that was just amazing. We were floored by that, and we were floored for one reason, because we always talk about the fact that there's internationals who live, but when we actually see them come into our own church in numbers, record numbers. Wow, that just changes people's perceptions and actually makes them realize in their heart that the mission field is right at our doorstep. And so this was a godsend, basically. So we use this site. We've been using it for a couple of weeks so far, and so I mean this is all fresh and new. And so that's basically it. And we're trying to see what happens. And this is really exciting time for us. So. This is just basically a tool which you can use, and I think that's about it. Yeah.
Okay.
Questions?
We'll come back and ask you some questions, yeah. And people perhaps will have some more kind of detailed things about the kind of personal way of personally interacting with students in general and international students. Right. But I'm just going to introduce John. So John Sinar is a Wycliffe MDiv student and has also worked for Powder Change at Ryerson and other campuses. Perhaps you just introduce yourself and share a little of your experience
Sure.
on campus.
So I used to work at Ryerson with Powder Change. I still work with Powder Change, but I'm also doing my MDiv at Wycliffe. And just a bit of a profile of what I would say your average university student looks like. So just to give you a sketch, I was thinking about this earlier today. If I was to qualify what university or college students or that generation looks like, the two things I would say that they really care about is satisfaction and relationship, right? So if you were to ask them, how do you structure the decisions in your life, the two questions that they're going to ask themselves is this going to be fun, and are my friends going to be there? That's basically how they structure things. So every time they're thinking about their life decisions, where they go to college, what kind of classes they're going to take, what they're going to do on the weekend, who they're going to hook up with. It's basically, is this going to be fun? Are my friends doing this? Are my friends going to be there? Is this going to be cool for them? So if that is a profile of the student, then that gives us hints about where does the gospel intersect with those needs. And where the gospel intersects with those needs is that the gospel basically says true satisfaction comes from a relationship with God and Christ. So all of a sudden, their felt needs of happiness and relationship is met directly by the gospel of true satisfaction comes in a relationship with Christ. And so what this looks like working with university and college students and even that generation is a big need to emphasize community and a big need to emphasize diverting students towards thinking, is this really going to make you happy? What if you were created for something better than something more? And what if that was God? That was one of the first, I would say, big needs that students have. You dig deeper and deeper and deeper into students' lives, and you find out that a lot of students, one of the needs that they actually experience in their life is just a general sense of shame and a general sense of feeling worthless, a lack of dignity and self-esteem, if you will. How this has actually come about in our culture is there's a lot of different factors. One of these factors is their whole life people have been telling them that they're amazing and unique. And eventually that breaks, right? Eventually they start asking themselves the question, am I really that unique? Everyone else has been telling all these other people that they're unique as well. Am I really that unique? So they start questioning their own self-worth and their own dignity. Along with this as well, a couple of other things that happen is, like a student going through high school or university or college, they have been brought up with a certain set of values by their parents, but those values get challenged throughout high school, throughout university, throughout college, by their friends, by their profs, and so they end up doing things that they feel embarrassed about or they feel ashamed about themselves. So a really good example of this is my wife was actually telling me that 25% of women between the ages of 18 to 25 experience sexual assault. So you can just imagine one in four women on a university campus has experienced some kind of sexual assault and the kind of emotional burden that that leaves them with. Or you can also hear other stories about these guys who basically go out partying and all their friends are basically telling them, you know what, if you get drunk and hook up with that girl, that would be amazing. That would be a great Facebook status update, essentially. And so here are these guys who go out, sleep around, and then they just feel really like pathetic about themselves. But then they've been told by their friends that this is what is cool. This is what is going to make them happy. And so they start experiencing a deep sense of shame, a deep sense of just like a lack of dignity, if you will. You take all this together and you look at traditionally how we have shared the gospel in North America is we've been telling people, you have failed God in X, Y, and Z. Jesus has died for X, Y, and Z. So if you believe in him, you know, your guilt will be taken away, which is true. You see that in scripture, you know, like students have offended God. They've done a certain number of sins and Jesus died for the sins. What we realize, though, is as we move towards a postmodern culture, you tell a student, you have broken X, Y, and Z, and the student's first reaction is, who says X, Y, and Z is actually wrong? Right? So we found out about a few years ago, okay, like this is not working. Like the way that the church has traditionally been sharing the gospel in North America is not working, but what are the other ways that scripture shares the gospel? And then we started even looking at how people in East Asia or South Asia resonate with the gospel, and they resonate with the gospel through a shame paradigm. You know, like, in my heart, I feel shame because I come from a lower caste, because I come from a terrible family. Well, what does the gospel do to that? Jesus, when he died on the cross, his blood washes away my shame, right? So now we've started using that paradigm with students. Okay, you feel ashamed because something has happened to you. Someone sexually assaulted you on campus. You took advantage of a girl on campus. You feel ashamed about that. Well, Jesus died to wash away that shame. And all of a sudden, they're responding, right? Like all of a sudden, they're thinking to themselves, yeah, like, I sense shame, and apparently this Jesus guy cleanses my shame. They might not really apprehend what exactly that means, but all of a sudden, the gospel is slowly starting to soak into their hearts and soak into their lives. So those, I would say, are the two. Like, there's like the big picture where it's they're looking for satisfaction in relationship, and that's the gospel intersects them with saying true satisfaction comes from a relationship with God. And then deeper down, as you dig deeper in relationships with them, you find that their real existential brokenness is shame, and one thing that the gospel intersects over there as well. So that would be a profile of your average university and college student.
Sort of the way he calls people, like the way he uses like a school curriculum, the way he Can you Sure, yeah.
Yeah, we actually found that for a lot of students transitioning from high school youth ministry to university, especially if they're living in a different city, there was a big disconnect. What ends up happening is that the first year of classes is tough for a lot of students. You know, they're in charge of their meals, they're in charge of cleaning their rooms, they're in charge of their social life, their assignments. It's really tough. When they were living at home, things were a lot more smooth, and you know, sometimes they would just, their parents would drop and pick them up from youth ministry or whatnot. But now everything is on them. And so the first thing they used to fall by the wayside was things that they used to do associated with their faith. So church involvement or Bible study or whatever that might be. So we found that for a lot of students, the first year was where a lot of displacement would happen spiritually. What we've been trying to do is connecting with youth groups ahead of time, like in the summer, and telling youth pastors, hey, like, is it okay if we were to come and connect with your youth group, especially the graduating students, and tell them, when you come on campus, look for us, and we will walk you through the first year of campus, first year of your studies. And we found that that's actually become a bit more helpful as well. And so you do have a lot of students who, even though things are pretty tough, they'll come and seek us out. You know, they'll say, hey, my youth pastor told me to come in and find Power to Change, and I heard you guys have a Bible study. When is it?
I'm also a third-year student at Trent University, so I'm not a graduate.
that's been a big question I was supposed to know about, and some fans. So on one transition from high school to university, how can parishes be more involved in that? And then also from the other side of it, how can they be more involved when the handover is back from campus ministry into some sort of a ministry, however it's going to be for people who continue through? Because that's where the disconnect for us is at as well. We're a veteran community. Everybody thinks our young adults are still at home, but they're really not because they're down here or they're out at Trent or UIT, wherever they are. So personally, I really like to know how I can involve that. I don't know how to be there.
One of the things that I've seen in the past few years is there'll be a lot of churches who have a college and career pastor, but that college and career pastor spends very little time on the colleges or the universities, right? So their basic ministry model is if there's already students at that church who are college career age, they'll run some events for them at the church. But they're not really doing anything with stepping into the lives of those students at the college or the university itself. So where we have seen models work is when a church actually is willing to appoint someone to spend a large amount of time, let's say 25% of their work week, ministering on a college or a university campus, networking with students, running Bible studies on a campus, so that there's that relational link right away. What ends up happening is that a student gets involved with our ministry. When the student leaves or graduates from university, essentially, they still have a connection with us, but they don't have a connection with a church. And now they're asking us to connect them with a church, which is fine, we can do that. But it also needs to work from the other end, where a church is actually making connections with students on the university on the uptake.
Do you want to just share a little bit about your church and that?
About the university students and
yeah.
College?
Yeah, I was really keen to that. I mean, they're in the middle of the neighborhood, so it's sort of more obvious. There's not a lot of church.
Yeah, we're not a large church. And really, if you're an inner city church, you're not a large church, and you're not. Hello, can you hear me better? Yeah, it's better. So, if you're an inner city church, you're not going to be huge. Probably 100 is probably the most, unless something is like amazing. If your speakers are like amazing, but. So we live like two blocks away from the University of Toronto and Ryerson and then George Brown, OCAD, they're all in the vicinity. So we're suited for this kind of ministry, but we just don't have the capacity. We know there's a commitment, and what we would love to have is university students be connected to inner city churches instead of just going uptown or where they're living, but be part of the churches, but we just don't have that. So what is your... Is it sort of answering your question?
Yeah, but I think it's a great point. This is a big, legal, theological issue, right? Which is, so they're mine. They come to my church, they're mine, right? So this is the problem. If that's not modeled, this becomes disappointing. Because, okay, so they come down and they go to college, and maybe they come to a church. So here's an illustration. There's actually a church. Where that speaker is, the inner college, and it's now called Every Nation, and it met on the campus, and its pastor was really keen to speak to growing into a good action with us. Greg Alexander from Madison, they were cool people, and they tried to get the palm of the church. The church was the majority of the the same place where we meet on Sunday.
the water for Two Creeks and the Cathedral of Montreal. And the cathedral there is just down the street from McGill University, which is very different from UNT. I don't know the numbers, but I'm pretty confident that 85% of graduates from McGill do not stay in Montreal. So we have, you know, a rotating student group at the cathedral that started when I first got there a couple of years ago with about three or four people who, you know, had bravely kind of forged their way into a relatively elderly cathedral congregation. And we just started meeting together, and they became a kind of nucleus. So it is that college and career model. I don't go to the campus yet. But that group got sick, and they became really empowered to notice the new people, because new students were always showing up all year long. They kind of trickle in, they stay for service review, and then they would vanish. But this group got to the table really good at noticing them, introducing themselves, bringing them to coffee hour, doing all of that good hospitality work, and the group is growing. But the congregation understands that those students are only there for a time, and that the congregation is ministering to those students for the students' sake and on behalf of the wider church, so that they are, it's become a place where those young adults get to practice adult membership in a church. So we move them, as soon as they show an inkling of interest, we move them into governance structure, we move them into liturgical participation, so that they have a discipline and a practice when they graduate and they do that step. When they walk into a church, they know how to participate as a full adult member, not as a kind of, you know, silent, you know, we talked about earlier today. So it's still small, but that's sort of how we handle that parish near our campus thing.
So this is a very important thing I know from conversations with people in my university family. This is a very big problem because students, when they graduate, they know the church. They don't have a reference. If they've grown up in the church, they use groups, they can't quite like their campus groups. It's a bit more ad hoc, and I think that's the thing. It's much more about connections you have, or relationships you have. It's kind of fuzzy, but it's sort of, it's still a small form, but they help structure it. And there's an acculturation issue. So if you don't know how to kind of make some
Yeah. When I was in university, in my third year, all third year biology students had to take a course called evolutionary genetics. And the first lecture in that course, this is a lecture hall of about 300 people. First lecture, the prof basically said, and because of X, Y, and Z experiments, we know that a creator doesn't exist. Pretty much like, it was like 90 minutes of that, right? And I was just like sitting there and like slowly sinking into my seat more and more, and I was getting very embarrassed for being a believer on campus even. But then I remember going to our club's office, the Power to Change office, and a staff member was there, and he was a very intelligent man. He'd got his master's in physics, and he was applying to do his PhD in physics, but he was also on staff with Power to Change. And so we started chatting, and I said, so my prof said all these different things, and he's like, oh, okay, yeah, that's really interesting. I've heard that too. So here's an article for you to read about that, right? And then, like, so basically, like, every week, I'd come and meet him, and I'd have new questions. You know, like, my friends say this. Like, yeah, that's really interesting. I read an article about that 2 months ago. I'll email it to you. And so the point being is that having good Christian mentors on campus for a young student can be very helpful in unlearning patterns right away. My wife's experience was not that helpful because she wasn't really involved in Christian community for a really long time, and she only got involved in like a fourth year of university or something like that. It was harder to unlearn a lot of patterns of thinking when she was taking some classes on human sexuality. There was just a lot of, like, a barrage of information that she was receiving from the profs, and it was hard to discern, like, what does the Bible say about this? And it took a while for her to unlearn those things. But having a mentor with you in those moments makes it easier to unlearn things than having someone come alongside you 4 or 5 years down the road. All this to say, I guess, is what I'm saying is for Christian students, I think a lot of Christian students, because they come from healthy churches, they my experience has been with them is that they've tended to undervalue being involved in Christian community on campus. Because they're thinking, well, I used to be involved in a youth group that was really strong in my church, so I'm still good to go. Meanwhile, suddenly all these different things have been happening in their lives and they haven't even recognized it until much after the fact. For me, it was a blessing to have this, to have Chris walk alongside me, because the things he was identifying things that I was learning that were not biblical even before I was identifying them, and he was just like in a very subtle way teaching me to unlearn those things. He'll say, "Oh yeah, I realized you mentioned this. Where does that come from?" I'd be like, "Well, this is what one of my profs said." He's like, "Okay, but how do you square that up with what Scripture says about this?" I'd be like, "I didn't even know that Scripture said that." Like, okay, yeah, let's talk about that, you know, in like a very subtle way over coffee or over lunch. He really helped me do that. And I think for Christian students to be involved in a Christian community on campus, like one of the best things it does for them is quickly unlearn things before it starts piling up.
Get into a time of apologetics. We have screened these movies called From Least Trouble, Case for the Creator, Grace for Creation. And we found that pretty helpful. Sort of opened up the minds of young people to ask all those questions that happens in campuses. And to a great extent, we find that we are able to sustain that faith, especially when this assault comes from the enemy through media, through the influence of campuses. To some extent, that has sort of given many of our young people, you know, that sustaining power during that period.
So, John Nathan, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Great to share. Thank you, everyone. I'm sorry to have
We hope you enjoy this podcast. For more information on the conference and how you can register for the next Vital Church Planting Conference, please visit www.vitalchurchplanting.com.